Welcome to the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana.
Watford for the win! Yes! Yes! Unbelievable!
Your daily home for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Welcome to Indiana basketball.
Smart takes the shot! And the Hoosiers with 3 seconds. Go ahead.
Indiana wins the championship. Keith Smart is the hero.
When my time on earth is gone and my activities here are past, I want they bury me upside down and my critics can kiss my
Now here's your host, Matt Dennison.
It's Indiana. What I feel is the pinnacle, the absolute pinnacle of all of college basketball.
And hello and welcome in a Thursday edition of the Hoosier Report. This week is rolling along and Lee Kelly is in studio with me as always on Thursdays for the show, and a lot to look forward to. Lee, the IU basketball schedule is out. The roster came out earlier this week. We got to go through simple things like heights and weights of players and to see how they've grown. And, of course, no one on that roster more important to listeners of this program than Romeo Langford. So I feel like we're inching closer to the basketball season. Yesterday we talked with Brian Snow about a great event that you and I have went to for a number of years now, the Form Tip-Off Classic at Southport. That schedule was officially released yesterday. Another great lineup to showcase high school basketball in our state this coming year. So it's little things like that that give me hope that, and football's, you know, here basically. So we've got that to look forward to, that to help get us to basketball season. But little things like that coming out each day remind us that basketball season might still be some months away, but it is getting closer.
It is. Labor Day right around the corner. I think college football starts on TV this weekend, and even though the games involve none of the local teams. But Labor Day weekend, it'll be in full force. And, of course, high school football moving to week number two. We got a little bit of a view of who might be good, who might struggle early but get better last weekend. So a lot of things going on, but it's always basketball season in this part of the country.
Absolutely. Let's take a look at the guest lineup, a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. I always look forward to Thursdays. Lee is with me in studio. We'll have some news and headlines coming up here in the first segment presented by Hoopster Sports Grill. Then in segment two, Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall will be with us to talk IU basketball. We always get a good take on things from Alex. Of course, we'll talk about the schedule. Of course, we'll talk about Romeo and some things about the upcoming season when Alex joins us in segment number two. Then later in the program, it's a segment presented now by Zaxby's, and Lee and I are going to talk some high school football. We've had most of the area coaches on Thursdays, a little longer than we got them in that Zaxby's kickoff show back a few weeks ago now, but we'll take an in-depth look at week two games and kind of give you Lee and I's thoughts on where we're at, where we're headed with this high school football season in this third and final segment today. So stay with us for that coming up a little bit later. That's the guest lineup. It's a service of Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. If you mention the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison, you'll get $1 off your box lunch at Honey Baked Ham in New Albany. Let's take a look at some Hoosier headlines, a summary of the day's top IU and Southern Indiana sports news presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. And Lee, you and I were talking about this just before we came on the air, and this is one of those headlines, one of those things you mentioned, we mentioned on this show, that I'm glad Indiana is not included in, because the Big Ten Conference and its football programs specifically have had a very rough offseason leading up to the start of this season. Yesterday, the Ohio State thing, we think, came to some sort of conclusion with Urban Meyer being suspended for the team's first three games. There are people on both sides of that argument, and to be quite frank, Ohio State really taking a beating by how it was handled, and a lot of people think the punishment wasn't near enough. I think a lot of people thought he should be fired. But nonetheless, that obviously is a situation at the top of Big Ten Conference football that has absolutely been an explosive headline here leading up to the season. Obviously, the Rutgers situation with maybe strength and conditioning coaches and head coaches even, pushing players far too hard, treating players in really unhuman-like conditions in some situations, leading to a death. That's terrible anytime a death is involved. I mean, just it's hard to believe that a game and sports we love so much could lead to something like that, and there's great proof that I think coming along that it has. Yesterday, I read a story about Rutgers football, 8 players charged in credit card fraud scheme. We're talking about college athletes that are busy taking classes or getting ready for classes and going through grueling workouts and getting ready for the college football season. There should be a ton of excitement and commitment to that, and instead they're involved in not just one player stealing someone's credit card or wallet or something like that, a credit card fraud scheme with 8 players involved and others outside of the university. Really unbelievably bad offseason and kind of a preseason primer leading. It's not been good for the Big Ten Conference football.
No, and Wisconsin has a wide receiver named Danny Davis that's been suspended as well. Wisconsin, one of the teams that's ranked in the top 10, thought they might have a chance at going to the playoffs at the end of the year. So it's across the board, and you and I have talked about this through the years. If you're going to get in trouble, don't let it be in a period where there's nothing going on, because you're front page news for day after day after day. So not that in the Ohio State and Maryland cases in particular, those shouldn't have been front page. They should have been front page, and they should continue. But otherwise, it just hasn't been a good year. And while outstanding athletic programs bring great respect to universities, when things like this happen, it really just knocks them off that pedestal. Wisconsin's an outstanding school, as is Maryland. Rutgers, one of the top schools in the country. But that's not how people are going to view those programs after they read these stories. The academic the way people look at the academics will be different because of what happens in the front page of the sports section.
Absolutely. And again, this is one of those headlines you're glad Indiana or whoever your favorite college football program, whether it be football, basketball, any sport, is not involved in some headlines like this. These are not good headlines. And let's hope when the season gets here that things can be a little more positive for a conference that is always well thought of and always strong in multiple sports. Definitely not the type of things you want to read about leading up to the college football season. There have just been some bizarre and really, really bad things surrounding the Big Ten Conference. One more thing on that point, we'll get to something more positive. I am perplexed a little bit by the whole Ohio State situation, the Urban Meyer situation. I may fall on the side of someone that thinks a little more harsher of a penalty. I don't know if that's more games. I don't know if that's ultimately being fired or what the exact thought that it should be is. But that's definitely something interesting to follow. Long deliberations yesterday, and it comes out late last night around the 9 o'clock hour that it's just going to be a 3-game suspension. And on top of that, if I read correctly, he's out for the first 2 games but can come back and coach in practice. Actually, he's out for the first 3 games, but he's out for, if I understand, he can come back September 2nd or 3rd to practice. So, you know, that's being there for the games is obviously huge, but when you break it down, not a lot of punishment there the way I see it.
No, and that one is unique. When we've had situations before, most of the time, the person getting the penalty is the one that committed the crime. In this case, he didn't commit the crime, but he knew about the crime, and he didn't tell enough or take it far enough. So it's a little different than some of them. I was talking about Danny Davis of the Badgers. His is sexual assault as well that he's been suspended 2 games for. So it's strange times. Bob Lamy of the Indianapolis Colts losing his job over the use of inappropriate language. And it's almost like on a daily basis, if you read the sports sections in the morning and at night, something happened that day that you just shake your head and go, what in the world is going on?
Absolutely. And moving on to another football topic, this one obviously a little more positive. IU football, there's some thought, and Mike Pegram mentioned this on our show earlier in the week, there is some thought that the starting quarterback for Indiana football could be named at some point today in a press conference of media availability with Tom Allen. Obviously, there's a lot of different predictions. I've kind of asked people over the last 5 days or so on this show, who do you predict? What's your reasoning behind that? And we've gotten multiple different answers. And Greg Doyle had a column earlier this week where he stated his viewpoints and had some interesting takes on things. So that in itself has become the big headline of IU football. There are plenty of other things to watch and areas of concern and some incoming freshmen people are excited about. But when you've got a three-way quarterback race, that obviously is going to take the cake heading into the football season. And it's a race that's lasted for some time.
And I don't want to bash IU before the season even starts because I am an IU fan. But if the offensive line hasn't improved to the point they can protect the quarterback, they will need all three of those guys before the year is over because they play some teams that are very tough, very solid on defense. Hopefully that protection will be there.
It's hard for me to see this not being an Indiana team that down the road a little bit, at least when you get into Big Ten play, will not use multiple quarterbacks. Just to be quite honest, I know the starting quarterback, it's a big headline, it's a big news story. Everybody wants to know when there's excitement building into the season, but no matter who it is that's named the starting quarterback, for that reason and other reasons, I think that IU, in my opinion, likely will be a team, if I had to bet, had to guess, it will be a multiple quarterback team. We've seen it before at Indiana here recently, and I think that it's possible we'll see it again. A few other headlines. Lee, I don't know about you, but I always enjoy, when I get time, to turn on the Little League World Series. You and I called a lot of the district games. We went on to cover some of the state tournament games. This area, so successful in Little League baseball and softball. We probably talk about this more than most people think we should. But I have had to follow that Michigan team with a little bit extra attention just to see how they're doing. And, you know, I thought that they were a team with how they rolled New Albany in the state championship game would have a chance to maybe get to the U.S. championship game, maybe win it. You know, it's hard to say when you play the international teams, but that hasn't been the case. They haven't come out with the same firepower and things they did at the Great Lakes tournament. They won their opening game 5-4. They lost their second game 8-3, and they lost yesterday to Southeast 4-3. They have had some outstanding games as far as fun games to watch, and I'm sure fun games to be a part of, that have been walk-off situations, just crazy finishes. So they've made some noise at Williamsport. It may not be the noise that they wanted to make per se, but nonetheless, it's been interesting to follow that tournament as it moves forward. Michigan eliminated, though, yesterday by Southeast, another one-run game.
Yeah, Japan, 10-run rule yesterday. First time that the announcers could remember that ever happening. So it's always fun to watch the Little League World Series. First of all, I love to watch the kids play because they play with a lot of heart and a lot of intensity at all levels. But the coaches, the parents that kind of develop as the Little League World Series goes on is just a lot of fun. Had an umpire in the international game on, I think it was Saturday, that was just a ball to watch him umpire behind the plate. The way he called the game, watching the umpires talk to the batters. They're not supposed to take their foot out of the batter's box when they're at the plate, and yet some of the kids were taking a couple of steps away, and the umpire would point at the box, and they'd jump back in and apologize, and it was just a lot of little things. I've enjoyed the announcers for this series. I think they've done a nice job, and like you, I have enjoyed it. It's really getting interesting now. I think we got a couple of games before we get to the American Championship and the International Championship coming up this weekend, and then Sunday, I think, is for all the marbles.
Yeah, the 25th, which Saturday, the, as you said, U.S. and International Championships and the World Series Championship, of course, the next day on Sunday. Let's talk a little bit about Week 2 of football. I know we're going to get into some of this later in the program, but there are some interesting games, another rivalry game in Floyd Central Providence this week, another conference game early in the year that's going to mean a lot is Charlestown and Brownstown in that Mid-Southern Conference. And then, of course, for New Albany, we're watching to see if the Bulldogs, there's been a lot of positive chatter. They had a great performance against Providence, but a game against Castle, if they could beat Castle, if they could handle Castle, if they could even, in some regards, keep it a very close and competitive game with Castle, might give us a good read on how good this New Albany team could be moving forward.
That Castle New Albany game last year, did the game for XVW down there, and one of the best games I saw all year. Both teams scoring just about every time they had the ball. New Albany had a couple of miscues, but came back, tied the game, actually was trying to receive a punt late in the game. They had scored like the last three possessions, fumbled the punt, Castle got it back, ran out the clock, and that was the end of it. But it was a great ball game, a lot of offense on both sides, and if this game on Friday night is any indication, it'll be a lot of fun for the fans.
That's a look at the headlines presented by Hoopster Sports Grill in Jeffersonville. Hoopsters is your hometown sports grill where hometown fans watch hometown teams play. Hoopsters was voted as best sports bar and best place to watch sports by the News and Tribune's Reader's Choice Awards. Hoopsters in Jeffersonville, where fun happens. We'll head out to a commercial break. We'll come back with our first guest of the day, Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall. IU basketball will be the subject, as always, and Alex's discussion is presented by CC Power Sports. That is coming your way after this on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison. Join Matt daily at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
I'll handle this the way I want to handle it now that I'm here. You f***ed it up to begin with. Now just sit there or leave. I don't give a f*** what you do. Now, back to the game.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Thursday edition of the program. Lee Kelly is in studio with me as always. And Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall is our guest, presented by CC Power Sports. CC Power Sports has two locations serving Indiana and Kentucky. One is in Clarksville. That's the mothership store, so to speak. They carry Indian, Victory, Slingshot, Polaris, Can-Am, Sea-Doo, Honda, KTM, Yamaha, Kawasaki, and Suzuki. The Louisville store, right off of Interstate 65 in southern Jefferson County, they carry Kawasaki, Can-Am, Sea-Doo, Yamaha, and Suzuki. New riders, welcome. And, of course, racers always welcome at CC Power Sports. Alex, it's a fun time to think about the upcoming season. We still have a long ways to go, but we're getting closer. The schedule came out officially earlier this week, both the non-conference and Big Ten portions of the schedule. And I'm curious your top takeaways from what we learned earlier this week.
Yeah, I mean, we've known for a while that the Big Ten's going to the 20-game schedule, but for me to actually now see it and have a chance to digest when Indiana's actually going to play certain teams, you know, I thought it was interesting, the stretch that they are going to have play in January where they have a ton of road games. I think it's 6 out of 8 games at one stretch they're going to play on the road. That's going to be interesting, and then it kind of gets a little bit more favorable down the stretch in February, where they're going to play a lot of games at home. That was one takeaway. The other thing was, luckily, I think for everyone involved, the Big Ten dropped the one-day turnarounds this year. It's just a much better schedule overall just in terms of how it flows. And now I know that the NCAA tournament is played with the one-day turnarounds, but traditionally the regular season, that's not something that happened. And last year, I believe, for Indiana, it happened 4 times. And just a lot to, you know, not just for fans and things like that to follow, you know, for the team, having to travel that much and on those quick turnarounds, and I don't think it was easy for anyone involved. So glad to see that eliminated. And then just, you know, the strength of the overall non-conference schedule. You know, we've known about a lot of these games, you know, for a while, but playing Duke and Marquette and Louisville and Butler and at Arkansas, UC Davis is another team that's going to come to Assembly Hall that's going to be a pretty good team. So overall, you know, I think it's a good schedule. It's going to be one that, you know, if Indiana wins its fair share of games, it's going to set it up nicely, I think, for a return to the NCAA tournament, which I think is something that fans definitely want to see this year after missing out on March Madness for 2 straight years.
Alex, let me shift gears here a little bit and ask you about the new net ranking system that replaces the RPI. And because I'm too lazy to do my homework and see what the differences are, explain to me what is the major difference between the two, and how is this going to be better, in your opinion?
Well, I'm not 100% sure yet what if it's going to be better. I need to see it in practice, obviously. I think the one problem right now that the NCAA is having in terms of trying to sell this is they're not releasing the formula exactly how they're coming to this measure. The RPI, there was problems with it, obviously, but at least there was some transparency as to how they arrived at the numbers. With this particular instance, they've kind of talked about some of the components of it, but they haven't actually divulged the formula as to how they're going to, weight certain things in the equation and how they're going to arrive at the numbers. But the basis of it is they're going to take into account, a lot of the more modern statistics that we talk about on a week-to-week basis. I write about, a lot of the things like offensive and defensive efficiency, which is the thing that Ken Pomeroy has kind of made his mark in college basketball statistics. That's going to be incorporated a lot more. Margin of victory is going to be kind of taken out of the equation after it goes, I think, past 10 points. There's not going to be any incentive to blow teams out. It's not going to help your ranking, so to speak, I think, after 10 points, which is, I don't know how they arrived at the cutoff of that number. I think the kind of the one thing that everyone is curious about, this is going to kind of replace the RPI on the team sheets that the NCAA Tournament Selection Committee uses. How important is this number going to be in terms of selection to the tournament? Because with the RPI, obviously it wasn't, you weren't taking the top 68 teams in the RPI and putting them in the tournament. You were looking at the top, you were looking at the RPI rating, but it wasn't the be-all, end-all. So, it's going to be interesting to see this year how this number drives actual selection of teams into the tournament. I think that's the one thing that everybody can agree on is we want to get the best teams in the tournament. I think the jury's still out on whether or not this is going to be a huge improvement. I think there's some encouraging things that they've done here in terms of updating the model, but I think there's also some problems in terms of just giving fans or those of us that kind of like to study numbers a little bit deeper look into how they're arriving at it. You can't just say, hey, we got this new formula, and then not tell us exactly how you're getting arriving at the numbers. I think that's probably not a great approach, and they've been criticized a little bit for that approach. So we'll see if at some point they're going to come forward and actually tell us how they're arriving at the number, and then just instead of saying, hey, we're doing these eight things, we're going to put it in the blender, and this is how it's going to come out. You got to tell people exactly how much you're weighting each different factor into the equation.
Yeah, as you talk about this, and I read a story, I can't remember who it was by, I think maybe the Washington Post, if I was correctly, that was somewhat critical about the NCAA not being very transparent with this update to RPI, to this NET now, the net, whatever it's going to be called officially. And I just shake my head when I read that and when I hear you talk about it, because only the NCAA could take out the RPI, which I don't think is perfect. But it does have a formula that you can look and read and understand for a new system where they don't tell you anything other than some of the major categories that it's going to include. I mean, it's college basketball. People go crazy over this stuff. Everybody wants to track their team, and there's bracketology going on every place. People are going to want to know and be critical of this until they figure out exactly how it's calculated. If you want to switch, that's right. Their business to switch. But how do you – I guess let me say this. The NCAA is the only governing body in sports that could try to get away with something like this, where they change something in their selection but don't tell you what it all includes. It's just unbelievable. There's no transparency with much that they do.
Right. I mean, they've given kind of the criteria, right? But like I said, if you can't tell us exactly how much each factor is weighted, how, as the director of basketball operations or whoever's at, in charge of helping schedule at a school, how do you know how to go about making your non-conference schedule? The other thing that's weird about it is like every team now has pretty much got their schedule locked in for this coming season, right? The non-conference schedule. If these schools weren't aware that there's going to be a change and didn't know exactly how each thing was going to be factored into the equation. If, you know, if they kind of went off RPI as kind of the baseline for this season, aren't we going to have a situation next spring where certain teams are left out of the tournament potentially, and they're going to say, well, you know what, we pretty much built our schedule to give us a good RPI number, but now they're not even using that. So I think they could have also done a better job of releasing it at a different time, or kind of giving schools a chance, you know, say maybe next year we're going to this, right? So we have kind of a lead up. So next year when schools are making their schedules, they'll kind of know what to look for and kind of what things that have to be taken into consideration. But to do it now, you know, a month and a half before the season's going to start, or 2 months, whatever it is, and say, this is what we're going to. Sorry, guys, you've already made your schedules for next year. There's no way for you to account for this. I think that's a little bit haphazard as well. So it just seems like the NCAA in general can't get out of its own way. You know, they want to do good things. I feel like, you know, the Rice Commission was put in place to as a reactionary thing to what happened with the FBI. Everyone kind of looked at it with an open mind at the beginning, and then they see the kind of the changes that they implement, and maybe some of it's good and then some of it's bad. Same thing with this situation, right? Everyone's been crying about the RPI for so long, it needs to go. Now they're going to do something different, but we're not going to tell you exactly how we arrived at it. I mean, I think they said that Google has some type of hand in this in terms of coming up with the formula. I'm sure when we see graphics on TV, it's going to say powered by Google Cloud, so I'm sure the NCAA is going to be getting some kickback on that. You know, I struggle like you, Matt. If you're going to do this, tell us exactly how you're getting the numbers, right? I think everyone involved deserves to know. The fans deserve to know. And more importantly, the people who are in charge of making schedules, the people's jobs and livelihoods are on the line. You know, if a team misses the tournament or whatever and loses their job, and they didn't really know kind of what they were looking at in terms of how they were going to make themselves in position, you know, in terms of scheduling to make the tournament, that's just not right in my opinion.
I think the selection committee is going to go into the room and say, Alexa, which team should be in the tournament this year? And
well, that'd be fine. That'd probably be better than the job that they do sometimes.
It could be. It could be. I'm assuming that not only will this help select the 68 teams, but also will be used as to how they seed the different teams in the different regionals. And right. That's one of the problems I have is sometimes – it appears that a team has received a very favorable seeding in a very favorable regional, and others are so loaded with outstanding teams that it just doesn't make sense to me one way or the other.
Yeah, I don't know exactly how, if that will change much. I don't know that the bracketing part of it is going to be any different, because when they do the seeding, they use the S-curve where they're ranking the teams 1 to 68, and then hypothetically speaking, number one should get the, you know, the best spot location based on geography and things like that, and they just kind of work their way down the list. I think a lot of times when we see discrepancies and we see, well, this team's in a super bracket, you have to look beyond kind of the surface of it and say, you know, how are the rules of bracketing coming into play here, where, you know, you can't have certain teams that have played in the regular season meeting before certain rounds, or you can't have so many teams from the same conference in the same bracket, things like that. And so I think that's kind of a lot of what leads to what you're talking about, you know, these super brackets where you look at, you know, say someone so-and-so has their one seed, they have any cakewalk to the Final Four, and, you know, this other team's going to have to go through, you know, two or three really good teams to make it. I think a lot of that comes down to the bracketing rules, just based on conference and who teams have played during the regular season. I'm not sure if that's going to change at all based on this. I think this number is just going to kind of be the number that's referenced now, right? It used to be RPI that everyone talked about. Now it's going to be net, although exactly how they're going to get to the net number, we don't know yet.
Alex Bozich of Inside the Hall, our guest. This segment is presented each week by CC Power Sports. We started with the schedule, and I want to go back there for just a moment. Obviously, everyone has had their thoughts on the schedule, and we got yours to start the segment. But Indiana with just one exhibition game this year, and I love to see, you and I have had similar conversations in recent years when Indiana plays Bellarmine, Indiana has played Indianapolis, some of the great Division II teams. And I think that as a basketball nut that I am, I love to see the Division II guys get a chance to play some of the local high major teams, because D2 basketball is really good. D2 basketball in our area with Bellarmine and Southern Indiana and Indianapolis, and I'm leaving some out from the Great Lakes Valley Conference, is really, really good. And sometimes players that are being recruited out of local high schools and high schools across the state might look down if a Division II school comes calling like a Bellarmine or Southern Indiana. But sometime when you look at how competitive they are and how they play Division I opponents in exhibition games, I think that's a great recruiting tool for them to say, hey, you know, we're not that much behind even some of the high major programs out there. So personally, I love it. Love to see Southern Indiana on the schedule, because if you look at that Southern Indiana roster, I get the feeling, and I know Coach Watson pretty well down there, I get the feeling that this is a season that they've really been building for. And they've got a lot of those Evansville Wrights guys from their really strong years that they had. They've got a number of other guys from Indianapolis and just the area that, as you would expect, a team would, that's coming into some good years, it looks like. So I think that, I know it doesn't count. I know it's not one of the big games on the non-conference schedule, but it's going to be the first time we see Indiana and Romeo Langford out there in action. And guess what? We're going to see Romeo and Chance Coyle, very likely of Bloomington South, go against each other once again this time in the college game. So I really like that matchup, and I think that Indiana should be wary. They're going to be a very strong opponent for an exhibition game.
Yeah, that'll be probably a much tougher test than the season opener against Chicago State, who's projected to be one of the, I think, five worst teams in Division I this year. Kind of reminds me of, you know, a few years back when Indiana played, I think it was Ottawa and Bellarmine in the exhibition season, and you looked at those games and you said, well, these are more intriguing than about half of the non-conference games in Indiana's schedule with some of these bottom feeders in Division I. I think you're exactly right, Matt, with some of the Division II teams around here. On a given night, I mean, they could probably beat or be really competitive with, you know, probably the bottom half of Division I, depending on, you know, where the game was played and who they're going against. So, you know, I agree. I think it's a great opportunity for Indiana to do something for these programs by bringing them to Assembly Hall, giving those kids a chance to play a game in one of the college basketball's most storied venues. And for Indiana, it's a good thing because they're going to give themselves an early season test against a team that should be well prepared, well coached, and ready to put up a fight. And as you said, it's going to be interesting. It'll be the first time they actually take the court in Assembly Hall in a competitive type situation for everyone to see. So looking forward to that. I hope the trend continues of scheduling, you know, the teams from around this area of the country, the Division II, NAIA, whoever it is, teams every year. I think it's a great opportunity for them to get a chance to come to Bloomington and play in a great venue.
Alex, it has not been a good period of time here recently for the Big Ten with Ohio State, with Maryland, with Rutgers, yesterday with eight players suspended, Wisconsin with their top wide receivers suspended. It just hasn't been a good time. First of all, your take on the Ohio State situation and the penalty handed down.
Yeah, I can't pretend to have followed it as closely as those there on the ground or who cover football regularly. But from afar, my first reaction was kind of either he should not be suspended or they should get rid of him, right? I mean, I don't understand how you arrive at a three-game suspension for this situation. Either he failed to uphold his responsibilities as the football coach and he needs to go, or you don't suspend him. It just kind of seems like a cheap cop-out to me. Obviously, he's one of the – Urban Meyer I'm speaking about is one of the premier coaches in college football. Probably not having this conversation if Ohio State's coming off of a 5-7 season and, that there's kind of the appetite to move on to something bigger and better. You're not really moving on to anything bigger and better in terms of wins and losses than Urban Meyer. I mean, he's one of the, I'd say behind Nick Saban, he's probably the most successful active coach in college football right now. So some of the comments last night that I've had a chance to read that they made at the press conference, to me, did not come off very well. I think some of the, he was asked, I think, Urban Meyer, kind of what he would say to, I believe, the ex-assistant coach's wife, who was allegedly, a victim of domestic abuse. And I think he said something like, I'm paraphrasing here, but sorry, we're all in this situation, or something like that. It just doesn't come off as very contrite or sorry or remorseful at all. And so, rightfully so, I think Ohio State's getting slammed pretty good today by the national media. Everyone's going to write that, winning trumps all. And I think that's unfortunately kind of the reality of the situation is Urban Meyer's an elite head football coach, and Ohio State wants to keep him. And so they ran their investigation. This is the result that they have come up with. I'm not exactly sure how you arrive at a 3-game suspension for whatever went on.
Alex Bozich inside the hall. Alex, I know we've kept you a little longer. Before we let you go, I do want to switch gears and have you answer one more thing or give your thoughts on one more thing. New Albany graduate Sean East chose Combine Academy, a postgraduate team that they have. They've got multiple campuses around the country, it looks like, but he'll be at their location just outside of Charlotte, North Carolina, which means essentially he gets another year of high school basketball, although it'll be mostly, I would assume, against fifth-year players and with fifth-year players. Your thoughts on going that route instead of maybe taking a scholarship offer? He had one D1 offer that I'm aware of from Southeast Missouri, but going the post-grad route as opposed to going ahead and getting started D1 with the one offer you have, or going the junior college route for a year or so. Your thoughts on that?
Well, if the one offer that he had, it wasn't somewhere that he wanted to go, I think it's a good decision to go the post-grad route. I mean, he's going to get a chance to get evaluated again next season. Maybe he'll catch the eye of somebody in Division I that would be a better situation, in his opinion, for him to go to, or maybe he ends up at a Division II or in a high school. I think with any person, this isn't speaking to Sean East specifically, this is just in general. I think the best thing for any kid to do is to find the right situation, regardless of where it is. If it's Division I, that's great. If it's not Division I, there's a very small percentage of guys who are going to go on to play in the NBA, right? And there's life after basketball that should be prepared for, regardless of the type of talent you are. And so I think what Sean East needs to do, and this goes for anybody, as I said, is, figure out what you really want to do, where you really want to be, and make the right choice. And so if he wasn't comfortable with a one offer or whatever else was on the table, I think it's smart for him to kind of hit the reset button, do the prep year, and then see what the options are. Now, the risk that you take is maybe that offer is not there in a year and you don't get a chance to play Division I. But the upside could be maybe he has a great year and he has 4 or 5 choices to go Division I, and maybe he ends up finding a better spot. So I think he's talented enough to play Division I. I was kind of surprised at the lack of interest in him this past season. I think from talking to a couple coaches who kind of were at the level would have went to, the common theme that I heard was, they want to see what he can do without Romeo. So he'll have his chance to do that this year. We'll see how he looks, and maybe he'll end up getting himself having a really good year and having a chance to go somewhere that he feels is a better fit for him. But as a fellow New Albany guy, I'm rooting for him. Hopefully he has a great year.
Yeah, absolutely. Alex Bozich inside the hall. Alex, thanks for staying with us a little later, longer today. Our segment with Alex each week is presented by CC Power Sports. Stop into CC Power Sports with locations in Clarksville and Southern Jefferson County for parts, vehicle sales, and all servicing needs for street and off-road motorcycles, side-by-sides, ATVs, and personal watercraft. Summer is here, so visit CC Power Sports and let the fun begin. Alex, we'll do it again next week. Have a great one.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Take care.
Also, while we were on the phone with Alex, just announced by IU football coach Tom Allen that Peyton Ramsey will be Indiana's starting quarterback for the season opener coming up for the Hoosiers on September 1st. So, again, they've got a mock game this weekend, and I'm sure that he wanted to have that done before then. But Peyton Ramsey, he'll at least get the starting job in game number one for the Hoosiers. More on that, more on week two of high school football coming up next on a Thursday edition of the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
We're back on the Hoosier Report with Matt Dennison.
Let's win this one for all the small schools who never had a chance to get here.
Join Matt Daly at 11 a.m. and 3 p.m. for complete coverage of the Indiana Hoosiers and sports from a Southern Indiana perspective.
Let's win for Coach. You got us here.
Here's Matt Dennison.
And we're back on this Thursday show. Lee Kelly is in studio with me, and we're going to talk some high school football and more here in this final segment to wrap things up for today and get you set for week two. First off, before we do anything with high school football, I want to remind you that on Friday, starting at 6 o'clock, we have 5-plus hours of local coverage here on the Big X. 6 o'clock, we'll have the kickoff show. We preview the big games on both sides of the river. The show is not only on Big X, 1450 and 96.1, the Big X, but also on 93.9, the Ville. So it's got a Louisville side of things to it as well. And then from 7 o'clock until the end of the games, we'll be rotating around, taking a look at some of the big games. We'll have play-by-play crews at a number of different games this week. We will have access to the Charlestown at Brownstown, big Mid-Southern Conference battle. We'll also have a crew with Justin Kalen at Providence at Floyd Central. That will be a big one, always a rivalry game. And Lee Kelly is going to be at the New Albany game for what could be a really good contest between Castle and New Albany, visiting Burke Field in New Albany this Friday for that game. So we'll have you covered when the games are all final. We'll have our scoreboard show, which is also on 1450 and 96.1 and 93.9 The Ville, where we hear from coaches, media, radio broadcasters, all types of people from both sides of the river to recap week two of high school football. It will be a long night. It will be a fun night, and we hope that you'll be with us, especially if you're at a game. Make sure you take your earbuds and you can listen along to updates and coverage from other games. Mixed in between all of our coverage will be constant score updates, and even the games I didn't mention with some local teams, we'll have people there to make call-in reports from time to time to keep us posted on how those games are progressing. So fun night ahead. If you're going to be at a game, join us. If you're not going to be at a game, we still invite you to join us beginning at 6 o'clock here on Kentuckiana Football Fridays. That's the name of our broadcast each Friday beginning at 6 o'clock. Lee Kelly, we look at week two, some interesting games after the opening week of the season. I've mentioned at the top of the show, I'm really, really curious about the Castle New Albany game. That's where you will be on Friday.
Yeah, I think it's up in the air. Castle obviously had an outstanding game last week against Terre Haute South. They always seem to have a great early in the season. Sometimes they have injuries, so the end of their season is not always as strong as their beginning, and that's true of a lot of teams. That's been New Albany's problem the last few years. They've had injuries to key players and did not have replacements that could step in. Castle, that's happened to them at the quarterback position a couple of times. But they appear to be a very solid team. Last year, as I said, did that game for WXVW, and it was a fun game to broadcast. Came right down to the very end. Looked like New Albany had a real solid shot. They stopped Castle on fourth down, got on a punt. They fumbled the punt, and Castle recovered, ran out the clock. New Albany never got a chance to tie it up.
Well, you can bet if it is that exciting this year, we're going to go to you for those final play calls, for those final moments of that game. But I remember that when it was a classic a year ago. Also, Providence and Floyd Central, it's a big rival game. Providence is going to be hungry coming off of not just a loss to New Albany, but it's a loss that I don't think they expected by the margin and by not scoring until later in the game in the fourth quarter. Also, Providence, as we know, they take on all comers, and so they're going to take on the bigger competition earlier in the season. And I think as this Providence team settles in, whether it's this week against Floyd or not, we will see a Providence team that will go on to be very competitive and have a great chance in the postseason.
Yeah, Greg Mingelt really likes Floyd Central. Thought they had an outstanding effort against Mayo. Thought the score was very misleading on the type of team they had. So I think both teams are going to be hungry. Both are 0-1 on the year. As I said, Greg Mingelt really likes Floyd, thinks they're going to come out and win that game. That's what he's predicting. Providence, they have outstanding running game, but could not get it untracked last week. Had a couple of long runs, but for the most part, New Albany able to stop them. That one's going to be an interesting game out on the hill tomorrow night.
And, of course, Jeffersonville, they look to get back to get to the winning column after getting roughed up a little bit last week down at Pulaski Southwestern. They have chosen to start the season against some of the very best competition, playing at that Don Franklin Bowl in Pulaski County, Kentucky. And that was really a tough one for the Red Devils. This week, much more of a reasonable game to find out about this Jeff team and who they are and what they can be as the season goes on when they take on Seymour.
Seymour is always a strange team to me. They start out slow sometimes, and by the time New Albany gets to them late in the year, they're playing their best ball of the year, which is exactly what you want, and have always been a tough opponent for New Albany late in the season. So I know they only put 7 points on the board last week against a South Dearborn team that's not very highly regarded, but it's always tough going up to Seymour, I think.
Lee and I always talk high school sports in this final segment on Thursdays. This segment is presented by Zaxby's with three locations in southern Indiana. And, of course, Zaxby's was home of the kickoff show to begin the season. We had all eight coaches and many of the top players at the Zaxby's location in New Albany to preview this 2018 football season. Going on down the schedule as far as local games go, Charlestown and Brownstown, that's another game we'll be featuring Friday night on our coverage. Charlestown with a big win in a big way over Silver Creek on Friday. Now they get to take on the perennial best in the Mid-Southern Conference, and so I think just like, and this is true, it's so early, you could say this about every game, but we'll find out more about the Pirates this week. Are they for real? Will they be able to go on and have the season like some think they might after the way they not just beat Silver Creek, but they handled Silver Creek?
And I think Charlestown is going to run into a little bit of a buzzsaw. I have been told by people in that area that Brownstown was supposed to host a game last week up there on their new turf field, but it wasn't quite ready. So this will be the first game they've played on their new field. They're going to inaugurate it. They're going to have some special activities. So they're expecting, they always have a great crowd, but even bigger than usual. So Charlestown going to have their hands full both on the field and with the fans from Brownstown.
By the way, before we continue on about local games, speaking of new fields, have you had the chance to see Edgewood High School just north of Bloomington? Have you had a chance to see their new turf field?
No.
It is red. The field is red. I don't know what color the lines and stuff are, but it is it's good looking, but it's completely different than what you would expect, especially for a high school field. You were talking about Brownstown, and I remember seeing an aerial shot someone put on Twitter of Brownstown's field, thinking that looked really good, and most turf fields look really good. Some of them have the brighter colors, like New Albany has that real bright red, and Floyd Central, the bright yellow on there that really make them stand out more than just a normal paint job on even a turf field, but and obviously that paint is permanently put on there. But boy, the Edgewood, if you're listening and haven't seen that, you gotta look for that. One other game of interest is Clarksville at Eastern Pekin, and I say that because, Lee, we keep waiting for the night that Clarksville pulls one off, and it sure looks like, at least the way they played Scottsburg and some of the reports we got from there, that they were much more competitive this season. Let's see if they could maybe get a win this Friday at Eastern Pekin. I hate that it's on the road for the Generals, but I'm really pulling for them to pull one down this season. This might be their best and, unfortunately, might be their last chance.
Yeah, they have lost 36 in a row. I can't even begin to tell you what that must be like as far as trying to motivate your fans to come out, motivate the kids. So Coach Bozier is doing a great job, I think. He's done some things in the community to kind of get the name out there. And so I think they've got a shot this week at Eastern.
Salem is at Silver Creek, Rock Creek, in their first year of official IHSA football, where they are eligible for the postseason. They travel to Indianapolis Howe on Friday as well. And the big one, though, between the two states, one that we'll be following Friday night, Warren Central out of Indianapolis. We know how good they are. They've been dominant in sports in Indiana now the last couple of years, but they've got a great football team, and they're coming down to take on Trinity. Trinity went to Indianapolis last week and lost to Carmel. Of course, it was a crazy week last week. Columbus East lost, St. X lost, Trinity lost. But this Warren Central Trinity game could be a really good one. We'll track that Friday night as well. Kind of a neat addition to what's going on locally to follow some of these big-time, high-powered matchups between Trinity and some of the Indianapolis schools and some of the series that they've got set up.
Yep, and just a note about local teams, WDRB, Rick Bozich puts his weekly best teams in the area kind of thing, and New Albany number 11 this week in that list, the only team from around our area on the Indiana side that made the list, so very interesting.
All right, Lee Kelly, thanks for being with me on this Thursday edition of the program. We'll talk with you next on our Kentuckiana Football Fridays coverage when you're live from Burke Field in New Albany.
Sounds good. Looking forward to the weekend. Looks like some great games. I'm going to be able to follow all of them while I watch New Albany play.
Absolutely, absolutely. That's what we'll wrap things up for today. Thanks so much for being with us. We do this each day at 11 a.m. right here on the Big X, 1450 and 96.1. Don't forget, we're back tomorrow at 11 o'clock to wrap the week up. And don't forget about our high school football coverage beginning Friday with the kickoff show at 6 o'clock on the Big X and also 93.9. The Ville. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Don't forget you can podcast the program on SoundCloud and Apple Podcast if you miss our original program. And until tomorrow, this is Matt Dennison saying have a great day, everybody.